Good evening once again from Studio 5 with this week's show brought to you by the Hutton Orbital Radio News Team. I'm Rudolf Hucker, and joining me this week, and as this week's tech monkey extraordinaire, we have the Harry Balzac.
Ook! Oh, hang on, that's ape, isn't it?
Simeon, maybe. Centre stage on the trapeze.
Pardon?
Ape. It's the answer. The simeon in the middle of the trapeze.
You're trying to make a monkey out of me, aren't you?
Well, if the cat fits.
It's a puzzle, but one puzzle we can unravel is the list of headlines for this week. Welcome to the horizon.
Did the dastardly Don double for drunken dolt?
Vegetable-based munitions? Will wonders never cease?
Stranger danger for 10th Fleet Rangers.
Never a cross word with the Pilots Federation.
The Dragon's Lair sets sail on a rescue.
We bring you up to speed on Hutton Space.
And it's time for an update on the community-led events.
Our older listener will recall a time when it was a significant event getting your driving licence. You took multiple lessons, learned how to reverse around a large rock, when to use the thrusters, and to always stow your cargo scoop before boarding. Well, that was then. Now all you need to do is turn up, and they give you a planetary approach suite for free. The clean-up squads have never been so busy picking up SRV debris from pilots who ignore the low-gravity warning message, and pieces of ships from pilots who think they can dive-bomb Akinar 3 with impunity. Don't get me wrong, we're happy to see new people. I just wish they didn't clog up the helplines asking why their SRV exploded, just because they left it on the surface whilst they went for a nap. No, we don't like planetary coordinates either, but it is possible to work out where you're going, and yes, it is annoying that the blue circle in the radar disappears just as you need it, isn't it? A new pastime has been created, that of old hands getting together for a drink in a space bar, watching the pilots with their new ship launch fighters take off, then spend an hour trying to get back aboard whilst being shot at, hearing cries of, "Why aren't you attacking them?" coming over the comm. There have been some questionable types trying to multi-crew for the first time, and I have to say that for some of you, you're never going to make progress chatting up the captain of the ship whose crew you joined. Not until you realise that it's not necessary to change every aspect of your Hollow Me by pushing all of the sliders to the left.
Word has escaped from Chris Hankey's all-you-can-eat buffet and fleet carrier regarding onboard unrest. Such was the concern that BJ McKay, Tarrant and King Hankey were summoned back to the bubble to ride shotgun after rumours of a possible mutiny. Tensions were further heightened when it was discovered that several pistols had gone walkabout from the ship's armoury, or Hankey's bedside cabinet as it's otherwise known. Chief Clone Meister King Hankey ordered a Matryoshka search into the entire ship and the ships within that ship, and the ships within those ships. And just in case, the glove boxes of the ships within his ship. Nothing. Not a sausage. Nada. Rien. King Hankey was just about to ask the searchers how many hands they needed to locate their own colon, when it seemed that the location of the missing armament was all too clear as a large bang was heard outside. This turned out to be not a rifle, but someone upgrading Van Tayern's ship. For the self-styled Keeper of the Flame-coloured Car was on board, though nowhere to be seen, as mechanics were working on his machine. It seems that they also moonlighted as the string section of an orchestra and were going on to a gig shortly, as they all had violin cases. The carrier was set to depart, but there was an unexpected delay as Chris Hankey's DBX was, and I quote, "sabotage." We suspect that this was just a diversion, as no sooner had Chris, or Hanky Clone Hash 42157 as we know him, returned when there was a cry of fire, and an oxygen-consuming conflagration is almost literally the last thing you want on board an enclosed spaceship. Obviously, Cecil with a raging thirst is worse, but as it doesn't do well to dwell on such things, we'll concentrate on the fire. Tarrant was sent to investigate, but cried off, as he claimed he had to wash the soot off his ship. He said that he was trying to sell it, and a photo was due to be published in this week's Astro Trader, so he wanted it looking his best. But we have only his word for that at this point. Eventually, after an almost complete ship-wide search for the culprit, and ships within ships, and you get the idea, they reluctantly came to the conclusion that the miscreant had to be in the captain's cabin. A cabin, mind you, that he'd given up for their guest of honour, the holder of the only known purple Hutton mug in existence, Van Tern. As the posse arrived at the cabin, a swarthy, cackling figure was seen disappearing out of an airlock, leaving nothing but a faint whiff of his aftershave, aqua di acciughe, a vague sense of unease, and the sound of a ship trying to dodge a laser fire. Following the faint sounds of snoring, they located the pilot of the Shady Lady locked in a cupboard, filling the air with cigar smoke and surrounded by empty gin bottles. "How the hell does Cecil do this day after day?" he wailed, before collapsing at their feet and commencing to snore with just a little bubbly sound at the end of each outward breath. And that's all we have from the Hanky Clone Carrier at this time. So on that bombshell, it's time for another bong.
With the NMLA doing the darndest to use Thargoid technology to blow everything up, AXI trying to blow the Thargoids up with everything, and everything trying to blow up any passing trucker, Hutton's innovative weapons division have unveiled their latest designs. Agricultural systems are often ill-equipped to deal with ne'er-do-wells that stop by to pinch their pumpkins, steal spice, or for their latte, and snaffle their truffles. So Hutton boffins have been hard at work designing the latest in cunningly designed defence vegetables to keep them safe from marauders. Intensive research into the deadliest of agricultural armaments led them from the cheese toaster napalm pickled cheese toasty, rendering your opposition unable to speak due to the roof of their mouth being boiled into a pink pulp, through grandma's oatcake cannon rounds that are said to be able to pierce even the toughest reinforced hulls, and right out the other side to super microwaved Apiornis egg bombs that, when detonated, have been known to take out whole city blocks with shrapnel. Visiting amateur chef and professional mischief maker Commander Palantir has discovered a hitherto, as of yet, unexploited, suggestively shaped vegetable munition, the Aubergine Explosion. Whilst knocking up a quick lunch for the lab buffins, he neglected a key step in Miss Beaton's How to Cook Rude Vegetables and put his aubergines in the industrial oven without the right preparation. After 30 minutes or so at 160 degrees, he opened the oven to see that the lines of humorously shaped vegetables had swollen even more humorously than before and were making a strange hissing and whistling noise. At which point, he pulled out his temperature probinator and gave one of them a prod to see if it was done. This set off a chain of events that put most of the research team under the care of Nurse Weyeth. And that oven is definitely not going to be the same ever again. The inflatable aubergine exploded, which set off the next one. And the next. And the next thing anyone knew, superheated projective aubergine innards were popping and whizzing around the room, sticking to hungry diners. The screams could be heard from over a mile away as everyone ran for cover. The boffins, once lathered in medicinal ointments to take the sting away, had been taking notes as to whether fields of aubergines could surround their valuable supplies and be fitted with laser beam triggered auto ovens to act as a deterrent to passing pirates. All of this for want of a little prick. Remember, truckers, never fail to poke your aubergine.
The system of Mictahas on the face of it is an interesting place. Until recently, it was just a small trade stop for passing ships with nothing much of note to draw people in their numbers. This was until one of the Brewer Corporation fleet carrier ship and gift shops was launched to supply space behemoths to the masses, or at least those with over 5 billion credits in the bank and income to support the tritium habit. The 10th Hawk Squadron, local caretakers, had very little to do other than sit back and enjoy their maple syrup, look at pictures of moose, and of course be dreadfully polite to everyone they met. This system caught the eye, however, of someone entirely less polite and more maraudery. The 11th Squadron, an expansionist faction with a hunger for stuff that belongs to other people and the mission to expand in a straight line that-a-way, picked Mictahas as something they wanted. To give the 11th credit, they contacted the 10th and asked nicely if they could have it, but the 10th were busy listening to Celine Dion records and bashing each other with hockey sticks. So, 11th took on 10, and 10 woke up realising that 11 was bigger than 10 and had one up on them. They called on help from jobbing trucker Farkup, who popped over to lend a hand but was met by Hutton's worst enemy. No, not the code, not federal forces, but lawyers. Handing over reams of paperwork, the invading 11th were given a counter-proposal by Farkup, but both parties appear to have filed them unread, and they round cabinet under the desk and popped open their hard points. Consulting both Leia, Wolf and Alvin on the rules de rigueur, the Hutton admin team were at pains to point out that the home team was always the one that should be supported, as a pilot's home is his castle, and there's no place like home. Hutton have attempted to bring the 10th and 11th closer through heavy negotiating, asking whether 11th can just borrow the system for a few weeks before going on their merry way once again. As of yet, no accord has been reached, and the system has headed into a pending war. It looked like the shipyards will be temporarily under new management fairly shortly, but Hutton stands ready to help bring the 10th back into play.
After their runaway success with the rejuvenation of Galnet, the Pilots Federation has unveiled de facto plans to move their core business from managing galactic resources on behalf of its members, i.e. every pilot, to that of mass entertainment. Yes, it may be taking the pee, but they quietly released the pilot episode of Blank Busters from Krypton, a puzzle-solving show that makes only Kinect look like catchphrase, forcing the contestants to decipher a 3D puzzle that's more fiendish than a 3D life-size jigsaw of a cubic kilometre of outer space without the picture on the lid. The hapless players were forced to wait for letters to arrive one at a time. Slower than a winged messenger brings playing cards, with clues in binary and ASCII, and then rearrange them into a well-known phrase or saying before the music stopped. And they weren't allowed to hear the music. With only 1/9 of the answer revealed, they had to show that they possessed the brain of a cryptic crossword champion, the crypto skills of the entire contingent at Bletchley Park, and could look at things from a different angle as if they were possessed of a human lens lock combined with a Dick Tracy decoder ring. Not to be confused with a Tracy decoder dick ring. Believe me, you don't want to make that mistake twice. And what did they discover after they've been through the science zone? Guessed what 16 random words have in common, run up a wet travelator, scored 180 with 3 darts, and pretended to be impressed to be playing on a giant version of a seaside amusement machine? He keeps watching the stones. I ask you, is that a suitable reward for all that work? Who is he? And how did he know that Jagger and Keith Richards were still alive in 3306? Should he keep watching them? At their rate, they don't move very fast, so I'm not sure they bear looking at for a long time. Perhaps they're different stones. Miners like looking at them, so it's good news for them, I suppose. Or is it an old broadcast from a very old Weight Watchers program that had not converted to metric measurements? Someone should tell them that up here there is no weight. In space. No one can hear you scream. We scream. We all scream for ice cream. Cold sack. Maybe they're not stones. Maybe they're lumps of coal. Who knows? We just want to phone a friend.
Here at Hutton Orbital Radio, we are always on the lookout for tales of derring do and dangerous rescues. One such mission was completed by the Fatherhood in recent days. Commander Slothbot Commander Slothbot Pralata sent a plaintive distress call that he was drifting, lost in space. Fuel fading fast and pot noodle supply running low, some 10,495 light years from the bubble. He'd managed to run dry at Dry Eye AIP TX-1D7-0 and was in a truly desperate situation. The Fatherhood, which stands alongside Hutton as one of the larger and more lovely pilot groups out there in the galaxy, sprang into action immediately, commissioning the TFCS Dragon's Lair, piloted by Commander Legion 917th, or something like that, to head out at full thrust to the system and attempt a recovery and noodle resupply operation. Don't worry, this Dragon's Lair isn't 2D, and isn't trying to kill you if you push the wrong buttons at the wrong time. And then again, it also isn't full of precious gold with a monster full of big teeth sitting atop it. It was reported on the Fatherhood News Network that the rendezvous was successful in short order. The stricken pilot tucked into a nice and spicy noodle and broth combo, and they were heading home to much applause. The return home was not without incident, though, as when the Fatherhood returned, the Motherhood was less than impressed that they'd just popped out and were gone for hours. And what time did you call this? And you without your coat? Before menacing the poor Fatherhood with a withering look. We love the Fatherhood and their news broadcasts, and we feel their pain. After all, we've seen the look that Lael gives us when we stuff up and let influence drop in one of our systems. However, a for the mug to everyone involved, and keep on flying, you bad father truckers.
Starting in Colanonia this week, we have a word from King Hanky that there's an outbreak in Doriso. So there's actually something to do for a change. Unfortunately, not being as diligent as the Pilots Federation flave favourite, Norma's extremely lovely cousin Commander Flossie, we don't have sources for cheap meds, so that you can make a huge profit, but as there are only about three stations out there, I'm sure it won't take you long to find them. The bubble is reasonably steady at the moment. A handful of systems are above 60%, but they should be easy to get under control. Well, assuming anyone bothers to try. They're the same systems we talked about last week and no one took any action, so I'm not crossing anything in case I get cramp again. WISE 0855-0714 is a different matter. It's running a little too rampant. We need to get that under control before it interferes with our conquest of Narnia. Speaking of which, we have beaten Luton 347-14 Prison Connolly and taken control of their public tourism administration installation, whatever that is. We've got instructions to keep Operation Wolf on the back burner and go for Narensi's organisation, the system owners, a challenging chase of over 40%, so I'm sure I'll be banging on about it in a month. Unless you all actually pull your collective fingers out and get on with it. The Green Party of Samani are between us and Narensi's organisation, but as they own nothing, we should be able to power past them without a conflict. So, feel free to prove me wrong, and make sure all the systems we inhabit are once again under the benevolent control of our glorious fluffy leader. Over to Norma.
Hello, here is the news about events that are organised and run by you, the community. We've got an update from Commander Yannick about Expedition Mercury's Wings. Hi, this is likely to be the only major update before our launch. The first meetup for the expedition is coming up on November the 15th in the system Witch Head Sector DL-Y-D22 and on Body 1A. The meetup landing zone will be announced nearer the time. The meetup will start at 1900 in-game time. This will be a pre-launch meetup for everybody to get to know each other and for some fun and games. Remember to bring your exploration ships and SRVs with you. I look forward to seeing you all there. If you're not already signed up with the expedition, please do this on the EDSM website under Expeditions. The big race news is that Elite Races 8WD SRV Endurance Championship is over. In a nail-biting two-stage final on Sunday night between Kilby McDowell Enterprise and Barreiros Arsenal on Nidsun 4A, the battle was on for second and third place, with Shea Blackwood already unassailable in first. Strong contender for the silver medal, Commander Skur, was sadly detained elsewhere and unable to attend. With 11 drivers in the race, ultimately it all came down to the very final stage after Alec Turner was beaten by the nearest rival, Osashes, in Stage A. His more cautious approach paid off in the end, though, as Osashes exploded during Stage B, leaving Commander Turner to take the silver trophy, while Osashes had to settle for bronze. During a glorious fireworks celebration at the finish line, organiser Black Maze congratulated winner Shea Blackwood on his incredible driving, thanked everyone for their participation, and promised more race events to come. The overall standings for the top five at the end of the championship were as follows. Shea Blackwood, 126 points. Alec Turner, 90 points. Osashes, 70 points. Skur, 68 points. And Kwank Larsen, 56 points. More news on the Titan Contractors and Trip Epsilon visiting the Generation ships. They had a vote amongst the participants and they've tightened the schedule because they wanted to give pilots who were new to Horizons the opportunity to experience that content without being tied up for such a long trip. As a consequence, they're now jumping four times a week, twice on Saturdays and twice on Sundays. Sort of, if it's Tuesday, we must be in the Coalsack Nebula, and the whole trip will now finish on the 22nd of November. Details at bit.ly, TripEpsilon, hashtag TripEpsilon, and their Discord, on their Discord channel. With just over 3 weeks to go until the race weekend for Speedball 4, details at bit.ly, SB4 Forum, with a capital F. The first period of training is over, with the current range of top speeds spanning from 3,000 to 3,600 metres per second. The consensus is that this venue is much more newcomer-friendly than previous iterations. Veterans, however, will find the low gravity means an even closer leaderboard, making extracting those final metres per second all the more crucial. A word of warning and a cautionary tale from Alec Turner, who wishes he had thought of inventing speedball first. With a number of carriers in system, it's tempting to dock at the most convenient fleet carrier upon arrival. As Commander Turner found out, that carrier might not want to stick around, and he ended up more than 1,300 light-years away from the location the next day. Be smart. Only dock at the official speedball carrier, the Lithabrake. Hear more on the official bubble shuttle service, the Speedball FAQ, and the most underused racing ships next week. And that's it for the community news. If you've got an event you'd like us to feature, please get in touch.